Five centuries ago, in taverns and public houses across Europe, the masses would gather for discussion and debate over the latest ideas sweeping the land. From one such meeting place, a small Cambridge inn called the White Horse, the Reformation came to the English-speaking world. Carrying on the tradition, welcome to the White Horse Inn.
Hi, I'm Mike Horton, and I'm glad you could join us on the White Horse Inn. We're continuing our discussion on the five books of the Psalter, Book of Psalms, and today we're looking at the third book, which contains Psalms 73 through 89. I'm Mike Horton. I teach at Westminster Seminary in California. Kim Riddlebarger is pastor of Christ Reformed Church in Anaheim, California. Rod Rosenblatt teaches theology at Concordia University in Irvine. And Ken Jones is pastor of Greater Union Baptist Church in Compton, California. As we look at the third book is almost like a cliff. I mean, you have some psalms of lament in the first two books, but they're primarily about the glories of the kingdom, introducing us to sort of the glory days of the kingdom under David. And now we get to that depressing section, frankly. Book three is really bleak. Where is God when it hurts? And this is not an individualistic kind of thing where, you know, I'm going through a terrible time in my life, and where is God? I don't feel that he's near. This is in terms of the nation, the covenant. God made promises. Is he keeping them? That's the question. It's the kind of question that's raised again in Romans 9. Paul has to face it. Has God lied? Has God stopped keeping his promise? Is God unfaithful? Same answer Paul gives in Romans 9 is given here in the third book of the Psalms. But before we look at that, there is, as I said, there are some laments in the first two books, and Ken felt led to share something from the last program that he has that he just didn't get in at the right time in the last program. He had an opportunity, but didn't get in the right time.
He hasn't slept all week.
That's right.
Yeah, and it's been bothering me ever since. No, talking about the Psalms of Lament, Psalms 42, I think, is a good example for a couple reasons. One, it says, as the deer pants for the water brook, so pants my soul for you, O God. And then it goes on to describe just a part of the Christian experience that we don't often hear about when we talk about the victorious Christian life. But in addition to that, we see how the psalmist calms himself, or how he consoles himself, not by looking within, not by doing anything on his own, but by looking towards God. And again, he asks a question periodically throughout the psalm, why are you cast down, O my soul, and why are you disquieted within me? Uh-huh. And then here's his answer, hope in God, for I shall yet praise him for the help of his countenance. And then in verse 8, O my God, my soul is cast down within me. Therefore, I will remember you from the land of Jordan and from the heights of Hermon. And then again, verse 9, I will say to God, my rock, why have you forgotten me? Why do I go mourning because of the oppression of the enemy? As with a breaking of my bones, my enemies reproach me, while they say to me all day long, where is your God? But again, here's the answer. Why are you cast down, O my soul, and why are you disquieted within me? Hope in God, for I will yet praise him for the help of my countenance and my God. Mm. And again, I think that the solutions that are provided here in this psalm are far different from what we hear today. Do this, do that, and it must be something wrong with you. The reality is, in this Christian life, it's not always hunky-dory, and mm-hmm. you don't always feel like zippity-doo-dah. Mm. Sometimes you feel like God has turned away from you, and the solution is not, okay, I've got to do better than this, I've got to get this out of my life. The solution is, as the Hebrew writer says, look to the author and finisher of our faith.
I don't think I've ever felt like zippity-doo-dah. what would it be to feel like zippity-doo-dah? Is that a person? Or? If we look at, for instance, Psalm 74 now in Book 3, in fact, Kim, can you read go ahead and read the whole psalm.
Why have you rejected us forever, O God? Why does your anger smolder against the sheep of your pasture? Remember the people you purchased of old, the tribe of your inheritance, whom you redeemed, Mount Zion, where you dwelt. Turn your steps towards these everlasting ruins, all this destruction the enemy has brought on the sanctuary. Your foes roared in the place where you met with us. They have set up their standards as signs. They behaved like men wielding axes to cut through a thicket of trees. They smashed all the carved paneling with axes and hatchets. They burned your sanctuary to the ground. They defiled the dwelling place of your name. They said in their hearts, we will crush them completely. They burned every place where God was worshipped in the land. We are given no miraculous signs, no prophets are left, and none of us knows how long this will be. How long will the enemy mock you, O God? Will the foe revile your name forever? Why do you hold back your hand, your right hand? Take it from the folds of your garment and destroy them. But you, O God, are my king from of old. You bring salvation upon the earth. It was you who split open the sea by your power. You broke the heads of the monster in the waters. It was you who crushed the heads of Leviathan and gave him as food to the creatures of the desert. It was you who opened up springs and streams. You dried up the ever-flowing rivers. The day is yours, and yours also the night. You established the sun and the moon. It was you who set all the boundaries of the earth. You made both summer and winter. Remember how the enemy has mocked you, O Lord, how foolish people have reviled your name. Do not hand over the life of your dove to wild beasts. Do not forget the lives of your afflicted people forever. Have regard for your covenant, because the haunts of violence fill the dark places of the land. Do not let the oppressed retreat in disgrace. May the poor and needy praise your name. Rise up, O God, and defend your cause. Remember how fools mock you all day long. Do not ignore the clamor of your adversaries, the uproar of your enemies, which rise continually.
Now, the historical background to this is, of course, as you can tell here, the destruction of the temple in 586 BC. This is where, you know, God took his residence out of Jerusalem, this intrusion, this consummation before the consummation. God took his kingdom back up to heaven, and without God, Israel was not a holy land. It was only holy because he was there, not because Jews were there. That's very important for us to think about in our own day. It's not because of any ethnic or religious grouping, but God and his presence that makes the kingdom holy. And he took his residence back up into the heavenlies. And once that happened, it was just right picking for Babylon. And Nebuchadnezzar came in and scorched everything. But Nebuchadnezzar didn't drive God out of the temple.
Right.
Israel's violation of the covenant led God to take his kingdom back up into heaven and to sign off at that point and say, This is no longer my people, and yet I will, for the sake of my promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, keep a remnant and extend my kingdom beyond the borders of Israel. All of that anticipating, of course, the coming of Christ. There is, throughout the Psalms and also in the prophetic books, plundering of the Egyptians, as it were, and the Babylonians and the Canaanites for their myths. One of the myths is of the dragon, the slaying of the dragon. That's not just King George. that goes back, way back before the Middle Ages. Dragon slaying in the Canaanite myth of Baal and in the Enuma Elish of the Babylonian myth for Marduk is basically this. The dragon is conquered by the hero god, and then he sets out to build himself a palace temple where he unites under himself both religion and the culture of the community, and everything is ordered around his victory over the dragon. Now, just an example of how the biblical writers plunder this, not by being mythological themselves, they were the first demythologizers, but by taking these myths and turning them around as sort of metaphors for what God is doing. We read in verse 13 of Psalm 74, "You divided the sea by your strength. You broke the heads of the sea serpents in the waters. You broke the heads of Leviathan in pieces and gave them as food to the people inhabiting the wilderness." And then he goes on to talk about how he prepared a place. Isn't this seen fully in Christ, who, after performing the work, after breaking the back of Leviathan, after exposing Satan to public humiliation and canceling the record that was held against us, set out to build a home. He said, "It is good if I leave you, for if I go, I will prepare a place for you so that where I am, you may be also." Mm. We concentrate on mansions of gold and streets of gold and all of that, you know, materialism. You know, if we haven't had our health, wealth, and happiness on earth, we can at least get it in the by and by. But Jesus is showing us that our home is, that he is our home.
Exactly. It goes back to what you were saying earlier, Mike, about the kingdom being present because God is present. The mansion is present not because Jesus builds a glorious edifice for us, but we are at home because he is there.
Right.
We get that wonderful picture of him destroying the dragon in Revelation 12.
The ancient serpent who is the devil or Satan. Right.
And then in Revelation 21, that great image of there being really no light because the lamb is its temple and the lamb is its sun. The whole constellation turns around the lamb. There's a conclusion to this particular theme, I think, in Psalm 77, where he turns from the devastation that has been caused to the memory of God's redemptive work. "I cried out to God with my voice, to God with my voice, and he gave ear to me. It gave ear to me. In the day of my trouble, I sought the Lord. My hand was stretched out in the night without ceasing. My soul refused to be comforted." You ever experienced that? Mm-hmm. My soul refusing to be comforted. Mm-hmm. "I remembered God and was troubled." What? "I remembered God and was troubled?" Yeah, happens to Christians too. "I complained and my spirit was overwhelmed. You hold my eyelids open. I am so troubled that I cannot speak. I have considered the days of old, the years of ancient times. I call to remembrance my song in the night. I meditate within my heart, and my spirit makes diligent search. Will the Lord cast off forever?" I mean, we've all gone through. Mm-hmm. This is Romans 7.
Absolutely. Yeah.
"And will he be favorable no more? Has his mercy ceased forever? Has his promise failed forevermore? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his tender mercies? And I said, this is my anguish. But I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High." See, but I will go out of myself, and I will remember what God did to save me. Mm-hmm. "I will remember the works of the Lord. Surely I will remember your wonders of old. I will meditate on all your work and talk of your deeds. Your way, O God, is in the sanctuary. Who is so great a God as our God? You are the God who does wonders. You have declared your strength among the peoples. You have with your arm redeemed your people, the sons of Jacob and Joseph. The waters saw you, O God. The waters saw you and were afraid. The depths also trembled. The clouds poured out water. The skies sent out a sound. Your arrows flashed about. The voice of your thunder was in the whirlwind. The lightnings lit up the world. The earth trembled and shook. Your way was in the sea, your path in the great waters, and your footsteps were not known. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron." He remembers the Exodus and the leading of the people through the wilderness and says, not, "I'm going to get the Bible to conform to me and my experience, but I'm going to get me and my experience to conform to this history that says, look, I am in the wilderness, but look at what God has done in the Exodus."
Boy, if that isn't a great case for some form of liturgy in your Lord's Day worship, I don't know what is, because we need, when we come into the presence of God on the Lord's Day, we need to hear this drama of redemption recited from the Old Testament and from the New to remind us not to look within, but to look out at what God has done for us.
And I think that's a reminder of what should take place in the sanctuary.
Absolutely.
It is a reminder of the present as well as past work of God in terms of his covenant faithfulness towards his people.
And that's why he says, "Your way, O God, is in the sanctuary."
Yeah.
It's great. I don't see it in the world.
Right.
I don't see it on CNN or MSNBC. I don't see it on in the movies. I don't see it in our culture anywhere. And I largely don't see it in Christianity these days. But I sure see it in your word. And I sure see it
recounting what you've done.
And
recounting
that's why his word done. Has to be shouted to us from someone outside us, recounting to us what God has done.
Right. Well, I love in another one of the Psalms, it says, I have longed for you. And this is where David is away from the sanctuary. And he says, I have longed for you as in the sanctuary. And again, mm-hmm. it's a reminder that it's while we are away, while we're dealing with all of the toils of life, what we receive in the sanctuary is what strengthens us as we endure and encounter mm-hmm. what we encounter.
And isn't it important, too, especially in the light of Paul's eschatology, to see this as we are all unlike the people of God in the Old Covenant. We are in the sanctuary 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. We are seated with Him in heavenly places. And so that we are always in the presence of God. Imagine that. The high priest, the top dog in the ritual life of Israel, could only go into the Holy of Holies once a year, and trembling at that.
Right. Mm.
We live in the Holy of Holies because the curtain has been torn, the curtain which is Christ's body. We talked about the covenantal aspect of this. Isn't it important to see the again and again the invocation of the treaty here? And Kim, you mentioned the liturgy.
Forget not your oath.
Yeah. We talk about this a lot in Reformed circles, at least, that worship is the covenant renewal ceremony. It's the time when we come together and through word and sacrament, God confirms His promise to us and we reaffirm our allegiance to Him. God speaks and we respond. God speaks and we respond. That's the pattern. That's why in the worship service, it should begin with God's greeting, not the minister's greeting. We call it, I don't know what you have for it, what we call it, God's greeting, and then the invocation. This isn't, God, we hope that you'll show up like you usually do. This is the invocation specifically of the covenant, of the treaty, saying, God, you promised to rescue us if we call on your name. Mm-hmm. Well, we're invoking that now. We're calling on your name. Come and rescue us from this miserable week that we've had.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's why, at least in the Reformed liturgy, we use the Aaronic invocation, or help us in the name of the Lord, maker of heaven and earth. Mm-hmm. That's the standard one out of the Genevan mm-hmm. liturgy. Mm-hmm. But other texts like that will work. You invoke mm-hmm. the earth is the Lord's and the glory therein, or mm-hmm.
The Lord causes countenance to be upon mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
And that's not, by the way, from the Reformed side, and I imagine it's the same for the Lutherans, it's not. It would be really great, God, if your countenance would be upon these
right,
people.
Right,
it is
right,
the minister,
right.
as God's mm-hmm. authorized
right.
ambassador,
right.
giving them
right.
God's
that's
blessing.
Right. Right.
Well, in fact, that's the posture you see Aaron taking, that he is invoking. He is actually pronouncing God's blessings yep. upon the people.
Absolutely. And it's not because Aaron is great, because
no.
we know too much about Aaron to conclude
yeah,
that.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
it's the ministry, not
right.
the minister.
Mm-hmm.
How about some other examples here of the lament being turned to comfort as he turns from himself to Yahweh?
Well, the final psalm in this book, Psalm 89, is basically the summation of all of this, where you've got the psalmist here, I will sing of the Lord's great love forever. With my mouth I will make your faithfulness known through all generations. And then he goes on at great length to recount how God has done all of these things to deliver his people from creation to the fall to redemption, and then recounting all these events out of Israel's history, culminating with this, you know, when I'm taunted by my enemies in verse 51 here, when they've mocked me, he ends by saying, praise be to the Lord forever because of my hope and trust in the Anointed One. It's just a great way to cap off that whole book of lament by recounting God's mighty acts in redeeming His people.
You know, if our low isn't really low, if we're not honest about how we feel, if we're not honest in that respect, we're never going to get the gospel right, are we?
Yeah, I really wonder how many of these dark passages in the Psalms would be edited today by most praise teams, because it presents a negative self-image, and we can't focus on that. We can only look to the good side.
Don't worry, be happy.
Right.
It's hard to pray for God to disembowel his enemies with a tune that sounds like a Come Fly With Me jingle.
Right. Or how about, God, why don't you take your hands out of your pockets?
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't go well with an airline jingle either.
Yeah.
Well, I think as we look at the reality of suffering, and I think we miss it sometimes by focusing our Christian experience on this country, but there are others in other parts of the world that the dark depths that are expressed here about their present circumstances and situations, it rings very loud and real to them. Mm-hmm. And we sort of miss that.
In fact, it's really amazing to compare and contrast the old Negro spirituals to the same revival music of American Protestants
in
the same period,
in the same period of time.
Same period, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And those that's why when I hear those old Negro spirituals, I much prefer them to anything in the, revival tradition because they're closer to the Psalms.
Yep.
Right.
They're closer to the life experience of the people of God who've actually experienced God's nearness and absence.
Yeah. Yeah, in line with what Ken was saying, recently in the Missouri Synod, we've had part of our information stuff being on the sheer number of martyrdoms and the sheer amount of suffering going on in this century by Christians. And I was not cognizant of just how widespread that is, even as compared with prior centuries.
Yeah, outside of America, it's a brand new era of martyrdom.
Yeah.
Well, we are called to be martyrs. Same word for witness. We are called to witness to Jesus Christ, even if that means losing our life physically. It certainly means losing our life in the sense that we have control over it. And that's one of the things that the Psalter brings to mind. Next week, we're going to take a look at Book 4 of the Psalms, including the Song of Moses. It goes all the way back to the time of the Exodus. And it's been great being with you. We look forward to being with you again next week on the White Horse Inn.
The White Horse Inn is a listener-supported broadcast. For more information about supporting our efforts, give us a call at 1-800-890-7556. That's 1-800-890-7556. You can also visit us online at whitehorseinn.org. That's whitehorseinn.org.